This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Paper. How much thought process do we really put into it when we buy them? Like when we walk into mom and pop stationery shops, MPH or Popular, we usually just kind of scan through the selection and pick them out based on price. How much time do you really put into it as compared to, say, you know, when you're buying a laptop? And our guest today is tasked to change that perception.
Everybody looks at paper as being a low involvement product and commodity. Now, that is probably the worst position you can be in if you're selling any product. You don't want to be judged purely on price because there's a lot that goes into paper itself. The brand strategy is, how do we uplift ourselves from just the pure commodity players to say that here is something that's got to be judged on the quality of paper, and that quality of paper is determined by the smoothness of the paper, the formation of the paper, and the opacity of the paper.
But how do you get the consumers to care about all these, you know, characteristics and features of paper?
Yeah, I have a tough job, don't I?
Yeah.
You're listening to Enterprise, and that voice you just heard was Therawit Litavorn. He's the Senior Executive VP for AA Paper.
It's definitely a challenging job, but it's a job which it's a task rather, which I believe that is achievable, because consumers are smart. You're a consumer. When you go in to make any kind of purchase decision, you go through a conscious decision-making process. Why are you using this shampoo? Why are you buying this pen? Why do you want this notebook? So that decision process, either at a conscious or subconscious level, but it's still something you go through. The industry itself has been guilty of voiding itself of that and looking at the product, the paper product, purely from a manufacturer's side, which is saying, there it is, go ahead and use it, without giving a good reason why you should be using this as against another one. So I believe that marketing is information, and our job is to present that information to consumers so that they can make an informed choice. Now, whether they decide to use AA or go to somebody else, at least they made an informed choice and not purely based on price. And today, we have a whole lot more color printers being used.
Yes.
You'll see multifunction printers. Before, it used to be one big copy machine. Now, you've got it on desktops. And the funny thing is, the cost of printing color prints is coming down. So you want a paper that is able to absorb that ink, give you that sharp contrast, and give you the clean edge look. Not every paper can deliver that for you.
How can you tell the difference in the quality of the paper? So, okay, I have a paper here.
Right.
Would you be able to assess the quality of this paper? For example, for me, I wouldn't be able to tell a difference.
Paper is like any product. Once you go in depth into that particular product, you are able to tell the difference.
Right.
For me, as you quite rightly pointed out, I would have thought, paper is paper. But being in the industry for 10 years, I can definitely differentiate my paper from somebody else's paper. And there are very simple tricks that you can do to assess the quality of the paper that you're looking at. A very simple one, for instance, is people actually like to lift the paper up and shine it up to the light. Okay, and have a look and see. I don't know what they're looking at, because that doesn't really tell you very much. But what you do is you grab a sheet of paper and you tear it. If you get a clean tear on the paper, that means that that is well formed. If you get a tear which looks as though you've got some of the inside of the paper sticking out on both sides, that means it hasn't been very well formed. Now, the difference in that means that you will probably not get a very good reproduction from the paper with the sharp tears in it.
Okay, could you tell if this is AA or not?
This is not AA. I mean, I know you've been kind of crumpling it up a bit, but this is also probably a 70-gram sheet of paper. AA would be smoother than this.
And you're right, this is not AA. Well, okay. I mean, we're sort of digressing, right? So you said that you have 10 years of experience in working in this industry. I mean, what led you into, you know, the paper industry and then working into sustainability of your company as well?
First, I was out of a job.
You were in the liquor industry before this.
I was in the liquor industry, and I thought that that was fun for the time being. And having enjoyed that time, it's now to move on to something else. The challenge for AA, how do you move from a pure commodity space into a branded space? That fascinated me because of my marketing background. So I thought, oh, okay, this is a great challenge to take on. The other aspect that fascinated me was, well, here is a company that is based in Thailand and wants to expand. And I've worked with multinationals who want to come into Thailand or come into Asia. And I thought, yeah, it's about time that we establish our presence as an Asian company outside of just the Asian footprint. So that was another great challenge that I thought, wow, this would be interesting to take on.
Could you walk us through, like, before you joined AA, what was the situation of the company? And then today that you've been in this company for over 10 years, where is AA today?
Okay. First, let me say that all the success we have up until today, it's not just due to me. I'm going to claim a lot of it, but not just me. All right. When I joined AA, we were strong in Asia. And by Asia, I mean Southeast Asia in particular, in the Korea market. So that part we were quite strong in. It was an opportunity now for us to actually move out to other parts. There was a whole of Middle East that we had to look at. There was the Africa, North Africa especially, Europe, and also the United States. The attraction of those markets was the opportunity to grow within those markets. AA already had the beginnings of a footprint in Europe and the Middle East markets when I joined. After I did join, my role was to accelerate that growth in the Middle East market and also to look at opportunities to expand ourselves in the European market. The challenge there was that Middle East market, I felt quite confident of making a success there because our customer base and the structure of the customers in the Middle East was actually quite similar to Asian structure.
And when you say similar, in what sense that we're similar?
Essentially, the channels that are available, the retailers that are available to us. For instance, simply put, a lot of mom-and-pop shops. So that gave us a great deal of confidence that we would be able to replicate our success here in the Middle East. And that proved to be the case. We are one of the biggest brands in the Middle East now.
Were there like red tapes when you wanted to enter the market or to grow rapidly?
No red tapes, if you mean by in terms of government. It wasn't. There weren't any there. The only red tapes were basically what the competitors were allowing us, that's not red tape, it's competitors, were willing to let us do. And they were quite open, actually, to a new brand coming in, especially a brand that is not promoting on price, a brand that's promoting on quality attributes. When you do that, you're actually able to uplift the whole industry, or category rather, itself. Because price competition eventually leads to a spiral which you all die anyway. But if you come in with a value proposition, a value-added proposition, it gives people the opportunity to actually upgrade themselves. So it opens that thing up. And we were able to do that in Dubai market, UAE, and also in parts of the Middle East.
Well, Middle East was an easy market. Europe was not so much, with their highly structured processes, as well as conscious and informed consumers. Thiravit Litavorn will share more about their challenges in the European market after this. He's the Senior Executive Vice President at AA, and this is Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Hello there, this is Enterprise, and we have the Senior Executive VP at AA Paper with us today, Theravit Litterborn. AA is a 45-year-old Thai company that has been doing nothing but just making paper. A sustainable one, that is. But before we get into their sustainable practices such as Kana, Theravit shares their challenges they face as a company from Thailand getting into Europe.
The European challenge, wow, that was a real challenge because not so many mom-and-pop shops in Europe. All very highly organized and highly structured. The Europeans have a very structured way of doing business, which is what they're used to. So we had to adapt our ways to the European standards. And that brings me into sustainability. The European market consciousness and awareness on sustainability was at a totally different level from what it is in Asia. And everybody who sells paper in Europe conforms to their standards of sustainability.
And by conforming, he meant to the PEFC and Forest Stewardship Council, or FSC, which are the European standards that Theravit mentioned. In order to do that, they have to embrace sustainability to conform to their audits and processes.
Now, that sounds quite easy. Well, what's a process? It's like an accounting book. Yeah, you just follow this. Yeah.
How long did it take, the whole process?
It's still ongoing. 10 years
still ongoing. Wow.
Let me tell you why. It's because European standards and what works in Europe does not work in Asia. Both these organizations have fantastic objectives, and that is to promote sustainable production and consequently sustainable consumption, and to keep our forest areas where they are. Make sure that they continue to play their roles as large carbon sinks and help Earth regenerate the oxygen that we do breathe now today. Right? However, those standards that they applied there and the methodology that they applied there cannot be applied to Asian standards purely because, well, we've already designated our natural forest areas, so you can't go in there and cut down those trees.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of farmlands here, a lot of small stakeholders, whereas European farming is more on a large-scale farming. So if you do what's called a managed forest, in other words, you have a large plot of land, you grow these trees, and you maintain the trees. And once you cut them down, you replace them with another growth of trees, and you continue that rotation as you go through it. Well, in Asia, because we have a lot of small landholders, owners, and we are agricultural based, Thailand exports a lot of rice, Philippines does, Vietnam also does. If you were to convert all that land into making trees for paper, all of a sudden you're taking away countries that rely on rice exports from the countries I just mentioned. So you're substituting that food source. Right? So managed forestry for us was not the solution to go to. And that's why the standards that were applied under both organizations' guidelines just would not work in Asia.
Now, since the managed forest way of sustainability don't quite exactly work out for AA, especially for a mill that has to run 24/7, so AA introduced Kana.
So we looked at the farmers that were small landowners who were growing the rice crops. And in and around each rice paddy, there's a small ridge. It's basically empty. It's called, and in Thai, it's called Kana. So we figured that, well, why don't we ask the farmers to grow the trees for us along the empty ridges.
Is it that simple, just to grow a tree and then you can use it for pulp and paper?
Good point. It's not that simple. A lot of research and development went into finding the right type of tree that would grow quickly. We needed trees that would mature in 4 to 5 years. The reason being that if you engage farmers to grow these trees, if the guy had to wait a 10-year cycle for the tree, in his lifetime, he may only see a return happening 3 or 4 times. So if you cut that time in half, then he doubles it and sees that return coming in. because that land is valuable to him as an income generation for his family. So we needed to do that research. And that research was, we worked together with one of the leading universities in Thailand to develop that research. And because we do not allow GMO in Thailand, it had to go through a natural breeding process. That means that before we found a suitable species of tree to grow in the Thai climate, you had to go through something like a 12-15 year cycle, because you have to grow it to see whether it's going to survive or not, whether it's going to produce the right type of pulp for your paper, and then can it regrow again? And then you also need to check the impact of that on the land itself. So a lot of work went into this before we actually went into full production.
Eventually, they found the right tree, which they branded into their signature AA paper. This tree in particular has its origin as a eucalyptus tree. However, eucalyptus aren't exactly known to be very good for the land.
A normal eucalyptus tree, the roots would be far-reaching. They'd grow all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
That is what suck up the nutrients. But with our trees, after 4 years, 5 years, we cut the tree down. And if you so wish, you can actually take the roots out. And the roots are taken out simply by running a tractor over them. It's normal agricultural best practice that you retill the land after every harvest anyway. So our trees have been shown that they do not have a negative impact on the land. But we do suggest you practice good agricultural habits. When you grow any cash crop, you rotate and you retill your land and give your land some time to rest. From there, we developed these trees, and we started to engage with the farmers to ask them to grow these trees. At the beginning, it was kind of difficult because a lot of concerns. Will it impact my rice? Will I actually get the money? Can we actually grow enough of this to make a difference to us? So it had we had to use a lot of legs on the ground, people going out there telling them, showing it off, and also a lot of the academics were involved at the beginning stages, so we had continuing ongoing research, and we could feed this information back to farmers saying that, okay, this is the results that we were seeing. It was not negatively impacting any of the lands that we are at, and to make them quite reassured that these would eventually turn into some cash crops for them. So after a few cycles, they saw that, yeah, it works.
A few cycles is like 10 years, 15 years then.
Well, a few cycles is actually 8 to 10 years.
Okay.
Okay, you've gone two cycles then. Mm-hmm. You would have done that, and that would have been quite sufficient to be able to see the impact.
Yeah, it's a really long-term strategy. You know, to convince a farmer, they will have to wait for 5 years to see the returns.
Mm-hmm.
How did you manage to convince them?
We have a lot of patient people working out there. But the thing is that, to the farmers, that land was not being used for anything. So they couldn't convert it into any other source of income. So for them, it was like, again, I don't want to speak in generalities, but because it wasn't generating any income, any other source of income, they saw this as being, well, what harm can it do to me? And if I can get more money out of this, then it's going to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we needed to have continued visits with the farmers. And then once we had a success in one area, we would tell the success over to another area. And in Thailand, we have similar to other countries, we have village heads, and then we have provincial village heads. So as each one of these village heads gets to see that there's a positive thing, then they actually help spread the word for us that there's something good that's going on here. Maybe you want to try it.
So this whole thing is called Kana.
Yes, that's right.
Basically using a new space in a paddy field. Mm-hmm. How long has this program been around?
Well, it's been around since our inception, and since before that, as I mentioned, that we probably started working on this about 40, 45 years ago is when we first started working on that.
Mm. So it means from the early days, it's because you couldn't find, you know, managed forest areas. You use this empty spaces in the paddy fields to produce paper.
Correct.
So what scale are we looking at? You know, how many trees that these farmers are growing for you to produce papers at such a scale today? Because you're available, like you said, in Middle East and also in European countries.
Yes, we are. But we're also positioning ourselves as a premium paper brand. So, we, as I said, we don't sell on price, but we sell on the value add. And that probably occupies maybe 5% of the total market. So even though geographically we have quite a large coverage, it's not massive volumes that you're actually seeing. But pulled together, it's significant. To run our mill, we only require something between 30 to 40 million trees. But every year we will have roughly 200 million trees that are grown. And as I mentioned, even though you can harvest them within 4 years, you keep them growing on for a bit longer, it doesn't matter. So it allows us to do that rotation. And the 200 million trees, as I mentioned, some of them are in their first year, some of them in the second year, third year, fourth year. So we can go through that rotation. And there are about 1 million farmers who are actually involved in AA paper trees from Kanna Project.
And 1 million farmers in Thailand.
Yes, in Thailand, yes.
Okay, so how then from this initiative, Kanna Initiative, managed to convince the European retailers to carry your paper? Because that's your expansion plan, right?
Yes, it is. Convincing the European trade partners was not difficult because the quality of the paper speaks for itself. The specific end users, consumers, do require the official certification of a FSC or a PEFC. Without it, they just won't buy it. And we estimate that to be in the region of 50 to 60% of the paper market in Europe itself. So even today, we're still excluded from that. As I mentioned at the beginning, this has been a 10-year project to get, first of all, these two bodies to accept that there is a different way of being sourcing trees sustainably.
Finally, after 10 years, the two bodies, PEFC and FSC, has finally accepted in principle. Now, AA has to make it implementable and to show proof for their sustainable practices. So, in not too distant future, we might just see AA with the right certifications that are accepted in the European market. So then, you know, they can access to the other half of the market itself. Up next, what he feels about recycled paper and the paperless movement. Theo with Lita Vaughan, he's a Senior Executive VP at AA Paper on Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise, and we're still with Theory Lita Vaughan. He's a Senior Executive VP at AA Paper. We've been discussing on how they embrace sustainability via the Kanna Project, and every year they grow 200 million trees by working with 1 million farmers in Thailand.
What are your views about recycled paper then?
Recycled paper is good intention, and it goes back to encouraging sustainability. It goes back to encouraging the fact that you should be respectful of the products that you do use, and recycling in general, if you can do that with whatever products you're using, then by all means, do that. In terms of paper production, recycled paper does go through a few more steps than the paper from virgin fiber that we use at AA. Their aims of recycled and AA paper are the same: sustainable production, sustainable usage. Though recycled paper tends to cost a bit more because there's more involved in the process for recycled paper.
Okay. I read this online, and the irony is producing recycled paper actually produces more carbon footprint.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. There is a tendency to be like that because our mill is an integrated mill. The integration allows us to produce biomass electricity. Every tree that we harvest to make paper, only half of the tree is used to make paper. The other half is considered to be byproducts, which is the bark of the tree, some of the leaves, and there's a certain liquid substance, and we call this a black liquor, that comes out of the tree itself. That is burned off and generates biomass power. So it's renewable energy. And you get that when you have a pulp and paper mill situated together. So all the electricity that we use in producing AA comes from renewable energy. Now, the recycled, you can generate biomass from recycled. But to get it into the pulp process, first you have to go and collect it back. And to make high-quality recycled paper, you really should only be using paper that's got black ink on it one color ink, not too many colors. And that's because you have to go through a process to de-ink it. Yeah. And once you've done that de-inking process, you're turning something that used to be a solid form back into a soft form and then back into something that has a solid form again. So there's a lot of energy that is used in the process itself. So there has been studies made which actually show that recycled paper has a larger carbon footprint than the process of virgin paper.
And I think also it's the irony of, you know, everyone saying go paperless. So do you feel that all these efforts of trying to be sustainable is going against you because, you know, people say go paperless?
Well, paper has been around since the first century. And it will continue to be around for a long time. My view on a lot of these people saying that you should go paperless office. Well, look around your office. Is it paperless? My view is that technology is actually enabling consumers to use paper efficiently, more efficient than what they were before. I was just relating a story to one of my colleagues that think back 30 years ago when you first started. I know before your time, but okay. But you probably didn't see this, but 30 years ago, part of the stationery kit that you got for your office, right, was an in-tray. And you received stacks of memos coming in your in-tray. Well, we've done away with that. And what we've got today is emails. And so instead of an in-tray, what you now have
inbox
is a multifunction printer sitting by your desk. And that allows you to print what you consider to be important documents that you may need to mull over sometimes and to actually hold and think about and maybe even to store in a separate file so you can continue to follow that and with the addendums that you want to add on to that. So that's one I see of the technology coming in that's making people more efficient in the way they use paper. But also on the larger scale, when we talk about commercial printers today, digital printing offset, the traditional offset, has moved into the digital age now. That means that in the traditional offset printing, you do away with proofs. You no longer need to see a proof. Because if you are using one of the latest machines that allows you to go directly from a digital PDF file or a PowerPoint file and it shoots it directly onto the machine, you can print out directly. It's like doing it from a copy, from an office copy machine.
Mm-hmm.
Except this is on a full-scale four-color machine. And no time wasted. And the first print that you do is usable because your colors will be correctly matched because through the magic process of the technology and computing power that's available for us today. So you've done away with all that wastage at the beginning and all the wastage at the end. And it also allows for shorter print runs. There's some services today that are offering on-demand books. So you can read a digital excerpt of a book. Okay, don't like it. Oh, I like this one. Ah, it's interesting. I want that book. And you can actually get that printed out. So you've got a book in your hands within a matter of minutes. That is available for you today. So it allows you to reduce your stock keeping units of the books that you have there. That technological development that I see as being increasing in terms of our efficiency and the way we use paper. So we're more targeted in what we use it for. We still, as far as legal documents go, for instance, there's still a requirement that you have paper contracts. And as far as, in the financial sector, again, another large consumer paper, not just for transactional printing, but also for printing where you have IPOs, prospectus printings, and all that. So there's still a requirement that you do have a paper copy of your prospectus coming out there.
No, tell us about the results of all the green initiative under AA.
Well, I'm glad to see that they're coming together. You know, after 10 years, you would have thought, huh? It's coming together on two fronts. As I mentioned earlier on, FSC and PEFC now recognize that there's a different way of doing sustainability. It's the Asian way, and it is consistent with the sustainable practices and guidelines that they have established in Europe. The other part which is coming together is the available technology for us today allows us to reach out to more consumers to get them involved in this whole discussion on sustainability. And it's giving them a choice of the products that they would like to use, whether it fits into their sustainable lifestyles or it doesn't fit into their lifestyles. All that, to me, is positive. It's actually, we've now reached the stage of really the beginning. We took the initiative up because I felt that talking about it, sustainability, to people who are already convinced, such as the professionals in this area and the academics in this area, while it's good, it gives you credibility, it doesn't touch the people who really matter. And that's our everyday consumer. We know, everybody knows that. You do any kind of survey and people say, oh, what are they worried about? Excluding any economic issues, okay. Well, climate change, the impact that we have on our environment today. The fact that we are consuming the equivalent of 1.7 Earth resources to produce what we need today. Clearly, it's not sustainable. So what can you do about it? But when you see the issue put in those terms, which are massive issues on a global scale issues, you feel so insignificant as an individual consumer that you can't actually influence any of that. But you actually can, because the internet and the technology available for you today allows you to go and search who is producing sustainable, who has sustainable production processes, and vote with your pockets, vote with your dollars, vote with your ringgits. Go and buy, or be selective when you buy and choose these products that do have sustainability credentials behind them. I wanted to go one step further and get consumers involved in our closed loop chain and to put a human face to the word sustainability. Because when we talk about sustainability, we're not just talking about the environment. We're talking about community sustainability. When you scan the QR code of One Dream, One Tree, Ream, and we donate that tree to that farmer, the consumer has an opportunity to reach out and see the impact it has on that one farmer or that community. And yes, it's in Thailand, but we're all part of the human race. Why not spend a minute to help someone?
So what can we expect next from AA?
Definitely the continuity of the One Dream, One Tree. We need to expand the awareness levels and we need to engage more and more consumers. This time we ran the campaign in four countries, Korea, Thailand, Malaysia, and Singapore. We're looking to expand that into other countries. We also are looking to work closely with our NGO partners to see how we can help them drive some of their messaging to get out to consumers. As I said at the beginning, a lot of the stuff that we're doing is not really reaching consumers, and that needs to happen. And that can only be positive for everyone. So from a corporate point of view, we'll still be doing our side in terms of expanding our markets and growing the awareness of the brand itself, and now standing on one leg of quality aspect and the other leg of being sustainable products. But I see my role as really driving that awareness of sustainable consumption, what simple measures consumers can do to actually be a part of that. My first experience now in running this One Dream, One Tree campaign for 3 months has shown that there's a long way to go. There's a long, long way to go. And we still need to get that sense of sharing amongst us in this community.
And that was Thirawit Littlevorn, Senior Executive VP at AA Paper. I hope you enjoyed this episode about AA's sustainable initiative. If you missed out part of this interview, you can listen to them again on our BFM app, which is available on both Android and also Apple Store. Thank you for listening. I'm Angeline Tay, and this has been Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.